From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins with this local news update. It's been 3 years since Shell abandoned its drilling program in the Chukchi Sea. But today, with much less fanfare, another company has taken a big step toward being the first to produce oil from federal Arctic waters. Elizabeth Harbaugh with Alaska's Energy Desk has more on the story.
The Trump administration has handed a key approval to Hilcorp for a proposed oil development in the Beaufort Sea, east of Prudhoe Bay. Called the Liberty Project, Hilcorp aims to build a gravel island in shallow waters about 5 miles from the coast and drill for oil from there. A pipeline buried beneath the ocean floor will carry the oil to shore. In a presentation last month in Anchorage, Hilcorp's David Wilkins noted similar offshore oil developments are already built in the Arctic. The difference is that they're in waters controlled by the state and not the federal government.
This will be the fifth island that has safely and responsibly developed resources offshore in the Beaufort Sea.
According to Hilcorp, the Liberty Project will produce about 60,000 barrels of oil per day. The project is planned to start up in the early 2020s. Although Hilcorp has avoided the level of opposition Shell faced when it tried to work in Arctic federal waters, environmental groups have sent the Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management a long list of concerns about the project. Among other things, they criticize the agency's analysis of the risk of an oil spill and Hilcorp's track record. The state has fined the company several times for safety violations in recent years. Earth Justice Attorney Jeremy Lieb acknowledged Liberty wouldn't be the first project of its kind in Arctic waters.
But I don't think the fact that an accident hasn't happened yet at sites in state waters is in any way dispositive of the fact that there's no risk of a spill here.
Lieb did not say if environmental groups are definitely planning on suing the federal government to halt Liberty. He says they still need time to look at the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management's final decision to see if it's legally vulnerable. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
And in other news, Alaska Native tribes and tribal health organizations have joined a federal lawsuit against the prescription drug industry over the opioid crisis. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
Alaska Natives and Native Americans as a whole are fatally overdosing at a higher rate than the rest of the U.S. population. That's according to the Centers for Disease Control. Rob Sanderson Jr., a leader with Tlingit and Haida in Juneau, said addiction often starts on prescription drugs. When the supply of prescription pills runs out, people turn to the street.
You see people that you would never have thought get addicted to heroin. It's everywhere. You see it with the rich, the poor, and the in-between. You see everybody.
Nearly 450 tribes have filed briefs in support of the plaintiffs in a lawsuit targeting the opioid industry. Jeffrey Stromer is an Oregon attorney helping direct the tribe's legal efforts.
I mean, this is an epidemic and a crisis that is devastating Indian country proportionally to a much greater degree than the crisis is having an impact in other parts of the country.
Legal experts say this federal multi-district litigation filed in Ohio now involves more than a dozen states, thousands of municipalities, and hundreds of tribes.
And that's different from some of the other large-scale litigations that people have compared this case to, most notably like tobacco litigation.
Adam Zimmerman is a law professor at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles. He said that 1998 settlement ordered the tobacco industry to pay more than $200 billion over 25 years. But that settlement mostly went to states. Alaska Governor Bill Walker declared a public health emergency over opioids last year. But Zimmerman says it's clear tribal councils don't want to leave it up to the states if and when it comes time to share any global settlement.
They note how tribal sovereignty is very, very, very different from the kind of relationships between a city and a state government or state and the federal government, and how important it is that they have a seat at the table to make sure that the needs of the Alaska Natives and the other Native American populations that are represented are adequately served.
Tribal health organizations in Alaska have also filed suit. The Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, known as SEARCH, operates clinics in at least 20 communities down Alaska's panhandle. Stromer said tribal health organizations are on the front lines.
SEARCH, just like other tribal health providers in the state, has seen an increase in resource allocation focused on addressing the impacts of the opioid crisis.
The increasingly complex opioid lawsuit is in the hands of a federal judge in Cleveland. With the list of plaintiffs growing by the week, it could even surpass the 1990s tobacco case to become the largest lawsuit in U.S. history. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Mental illness isn't always an easy subject to talk about, but one teenager in Petersburg wants to help change that. She's telling her story of depression and anxiety in the hopes that it helps others. KFSK's Angela Denning has the story, and a warning to listeners, this report may be disturbing to some people.
You can't always see it. It's not like a cast on a broken leg. But nonetheless, depression is a medical illness that might need professional help.
When I was first diagnosed, I kept it a secret. My family knew, but that was it. None of my friends knew.
Take Megan Parker, for example. She's a fashionable junior in high school with blonde hair and blue eyes. She has friends and participates in extracurricular activities. She's an athlete, competing in basketball, cross country, and swimming. But alongside all of that, she has a mental health disorder. She was first diagnosed a year ago with depression and anxiety. She wrote a poem about it titled, You Are Me.
You are the knives stuck in my head, the ones I can't get to go away. You are the thoughts of death, the thoughts that my life isn't worth this pain.
She wrote the poem in January.
And at that time, and still currently, I was suffering with severe depression and general anxiety disorder.
Although she's comfortable talking about it now, she didn't share the poem with anyone for months. Her negative thoughts would keep her down.
It's almost like everything that you hear, you could hear a positive comment about yourself, or you could hear a saying that somebody says to you, but instead of picking out the positive things in it, you pick out all the negatives, and you just keep thinking about it until it's so overwhelming. That's all you can think about.
Parker was out of school last year for a few months dealing with her depression. It wasn't the first time she saw a doctor for it. She sought professional help in the sixth grade. It seemed to subside for a few years and then came back. Through therapy, she's learned skills to help her cope. She can recognize when negative thoughts are happening and knows steps she can take to stop it, like journaling and talking to others. She learned the importance of communicating at a two-week camp for depressed teens last year in Minnesota.
I did not feel fixed. I mean, it doesn't get fixed in 2 weeks, but I did feel a lot more supported.
The camp was hosted by the Mayo Clinic and also included parents of the teens. Parker still communicates regularly with others who attended the camp through texts and emails.
They understood me and what I was going through on a whole different level than anybody else.
One in four people will experience mental illness. There's a whole spectrum of depression. Sometimes it's shorter-term situational depression, and other times it's a lifelong struggle.
I think there's a lot of misconceptions about it.
That's Kate Smith, a therapist at Petersburg Mental Health.
There is that certain perception from some people where if they don't see it, they don't really quite understand it or know really what's going on. And I think in society sometimes there's that pick them up by their bootstraps kind of mentality and not to seek help.
Sometimes depression can cause suicidal thoughts. Family and friends might not know if that's happening or not. Some signs and symptoms include taking risks that are out of character, giving things away, talking or writing about death, being withdrawn, or losing interest in certain activities. But Smith stresses these signs don't necessarily mean suicidal thoughts, because it's different for everyone. She says it is okay just to ask.
Asking somebody, are you suicidal? Do you have thoughts of self-harm? That is okay to do and it's important to do, and it will not put that thought into that other person's head.
Now Parker writes every night in a journal before she goes to bed. It helps her form her thoughts and understand her feelings.
When I'm feeling better, feeling that happiness, I've learned along the way that it's worth it to feel that happy, to feel that carefree, rather than just ending it before you can feel that.
Parker hopes by sharing her story that some of the myths and stigma surrounding mental illness will end. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
And taking a look at the weather for the rest of today, rain is expected. Highs around 50. Tonight, rain, lows in the 40s. And for tomorrow, rain again, highs around 50. You're listening to KTOO. For more news and information, visit our website at ktoo.org.